Before we get started, a heads up that this episode mentions eating disorders, particularly binge eating disorder and anorexia. And while it's constructive in many ways, depending on your background, this could be triggering for you. I'm not an expert or a medical professional, so if you're struggling, call the National Eating Disorder Helpline at 1-800-931-2237. This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Oru Kayak. They design folding kayaks that can go virtually anywhere, thanks to their lightweight and folding design. Stay tuned for later in the episode. We talk again to Brianna Media about experiencing Utah's Lake Powell in an entirely unique way. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
With rock climbing, when you're like on a pitch and you're trying to get to like the next hold, you really have no time to think about how your body looks or like, ooh, this part of my body is jiggly. You're really just focusing on this next hold. You don't have enough time to like really allow that eating disorder voice to come in.
This is Kristen Ailes, and whether or not you understand what she means by that eating disorder voice, I think that you can probably relate to this episode in some way. Maybe you've gone to bed hungry. Maybe you've pinched the soft of your stomach or the skin on your inner thighs. Maybe you've counted calories in your head. Maybe you were confused when your body started to look different when you were 10, 11, 12, 18, 30, 45. Perhaps you have a loved one, a family member, a friend who all of a sudden you felt like you couldn't talk to anymore, who withdrew, who shrunk before your eyes. Maybe it broke your heart a little. Maybe you've stood on a scale and you've not believed the number looking back at you. Maybe you thought, this is the time I'll get the number down. And once I'm 5, 10, 20, 30 pounds later, I'll be better. I'll be me. Our identities are always shifting. Eating disorders and disordered thoughts around food and body image don't happen because we're weak. They're complicated. I want to talk with Kristen Ailes because hers is a story of identity, of growing up, of coping and overcoming. Kristen struggled with binge eating disorder and anorexia at a young age. She understands that recovery is lifelong, but she wants her story to help others. Kristen's is a story of play, of rediscovering her love for the outdoors. But let's go back to the beginning because she'll tell us all about it.
I grew up in Santa Cruz, California. I was really lucky to go to this private school. My mom was the lunch lady, and that's how we paid for it. It was this beautiful place where we got to run around without shoes, and we would climb redwood trees like hundreds of feet in the air. We would chase the peacocks on the campus, and there was goats and chickens, and I just remember getting lost in the woods and playing in the creek, getting poison oak all over my body. I would never trade the amount of times I've gotten poison oak. So many life lessons. And I really feel like I developed mostly in the redwood forest, which feels really special to me.
So you always felt a connection to nature and particularly the California landscape?
I think growing up, I was just lucky enough to be placed in the outdoors. And then when I grew into my teenage and college years, I left it kind of unknowingly. It was the separation that happened unconsciously when I switched schools. And it's so funny to talk about this because it seems like such like this thing that everybody goes through. But for me, for some reason, it was just this very big turning point in my life. When I had gone from basically being outside every day, most of our learning was done in the outdoors, which felt very special. It was like a very expeditionary way of learning. And then I went into a traditional classroom where we were sitting in desks we were told that we had to pay attention, and I was never really good at that. I like had this very imaginative mind, and I'm very hands-on, and so when I went into a classroom setting, it was very hard for me to stay in one place. And because I had spent so much time learning about poison oak and berries and redwood trees, I also didn't necessarily have all of these reading and math skills. And so it was embarrassing. As a fifth grader, I felt suddenly very inward, where I thought something was really wrong with me. So I went to food as this comfort. My parents had jobs, and we'd come home from school, me and my sister and a couple of my friends. And all of a sudden, instead of being outside, we were sitting in the house, and I didn't really know how to fill my time. We'd do things like make cookies and eat ice cream and things that like a normal child would do, definitely. But at that time, I was really trying to compensate for like maybe this lack of nature or not having my mom and my dad around as much. And I really used it as this comfort and like this go-to. I remember at first it was like this thing where it was comforting and fun. Eating ice cream is so fun. But it got to a point where I would come home and then I'd eat a gallon of ice cream. And then I'd get really nervous and scared that I had just eaten this amount of food, and I would try and hide it, throw things away and like be very secretive. And it became a real problem and really unhealthy.
Some people don't think about as much like what it was like to be that age, you know, 11, 12 as a little girl. For me, I had a really hard time letting go of childhood in a lot of ways because I had this play that filled my time. And then when I didn't have that play anymore, when I wasn't supposed to have that play anymore.
I think that age, we look at it and like, even if we met a fifth grader now, we'd be like, oh, your world must be so simple. But really, the life of a fifth and sixth grader is just so complex. You're coming in to puberty for the first time and you have all these feelings. Your brain is developing in this new way. All of a sudden, you're being exposed to what it feels like to like a boy. And then you're also seeing images from media. And at this time as well, like your body is starting to change. And it's really hard because you don't have any, as a young girl, like no one tells you that it's puberty. You're going to develop curves and you're going to have fat in different places. And as a girl, you're like, but I can't control that. And it's really hard and scary. And so as a fifth grader, I think there's so much going on, and it's just such like an important time, you know?
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's hard if someone isn't explaining certain things to you, or even my mom tried to talk to me about certain things and I was just like not having it. So when you were in fifth grade, you started to binge eat and probably start gaining weight. What age did you start becoming aware of the weight gain and starting to diet?
I think when I went into junior high was when I really started to notice and become aware that I was feeling larger than my friends. I had like developed like a little girl posse in fifth and sixth grade. And we went to junior high and you're like surrounded by new people. And all of a sudden they started making more friends and I did not. It was also when I was first introduced to bullying. They don't encourage you to start dieting. All of a sudden, like you're looking for a coping mechanism, and food at that time was my coping mechanism. So I started turning to food even more heavily. This continued into high school, and high school was this time where I remember walking down the halls and getting called names and being teased and trying my hardest to pretend like I wouldn't hear what people were saying. That's something that I remember very vividly, was being called a name and then just knowing that I couldn't handle that. If so, I just blocked it out. So one of the girls that I was really good friends with, were best friends to this day. She was a very popular girl in high school, and I love her so much. It's because she's like so nice, but she was on the homecoming court and she asked me, "Hey, Kristen, like, please be in the homecoming skit. I would love for you to be a part of this. This is something that matters to me." And I was really nervous about it, but I said, okay, I'll take a chance. I'll do this. Why not? And so I joined the homecoming skit. I was really nervous because it's with all these like really popular outgoing people, something that I always had wanted to be. And I had my one line. It was cops and robbers themed. And I was a robber at our high school. They filled up the entire auditorium. It's second period. And you go in and all the skits happen. That day, I'm really nervous, but we do our skit. I walk into the middle of the auditorium and I'm under this huge spotlight and I say my one line. All of a sudden, some kid from the darkness around me yells out, "Fatty!" And everything stops. No one came on to say their next line for just 5 to 10 seconds. It was complete silence and me under the spotlight, just surrounded by teenagers. And that was a really big moment for me. It was like I had been publicly shamed in this way and exposed in this way that I had been trying to avoid. And all of a sudden, I couldn't avoid it anymore. My problem then became so public.
And beyond that moment, the administrators of Kristen's school continued to use that outburst as a lesson. They called her out by name. So that 5 to 10 seconds of silence grew louder and louder.
So, you know, when you have an eating disorder, it's a very isolating experience. And you want to hide. There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of guilt. And this goes along with any eating disorder, whether it's binge eating, anorexia, bulimia. It's very isolating. So being exposed over and over and over again was a very difficult experience for me. And I think that was when I went from the shift of overeating to dieting.
What was the reaction of your peers and your family when you began losing weight?
So my mom was very supportive. When this thing at my high school had happened, I went to her. I was like, okay, I need help. And so I went and started doing this dieting program from the support of her, which in the very beginning was so great. I learned about nutrition and there was no points, no calories. It was very much based around counseling. Like you had a therapist throughout the whole process. It was this beautiful relationship where I learned about different types of food and whole foods and things like that. I still eat in that way now, which was great. I kind of think that everybody should have a nutrition class. But what triggered it was when I started to lose weight and started to gain more positive attention. It was something that was kind of addictive. I'm getting all this attention in this new way that I've never experienced, and it feels really good. I started restricting after I had finished this program, where I was down at a very healthy weight. And then I would restrict after the fact. And I think my parents were very confused and very scared and like didn't know how to talk about it. Because our bodies are a very vulnerable topic of conversation. And for me, my body, since it had fluctuated so much, it was already this very vulnerable topic of conversation that nobody really wanted to touch into. I think people were really scared. My parents didn't really know what to do other than like tell me to eat what was on my plate and question me. As a teenager and as someone who was isolating themselves, I did not want anything to do with that. And so my reaction was to get angry or to get defensive. My eating disorder had really affected my relationships with my entire family and friends.
What was there a way that you wanted them to talk to you about it, or did you just not want them to talk to you about it at all?
As a teenager, I think that I did not want them to talk about it at all. Looking back at it now, it's something that I think so I never went to a traditional treatment center, and it was something that as a therapist now, I look back and I meet all of the diagnostic criteria for binge eating when I was younger, anorexia when I was in my later adolescence. I sometimes wish that we had taken a greater step to maybe going to counseling, sitting down and having someone talk to us and lead a conversation of, wow, like, this is how you're affecting me. And I'm really scared. Because I think if somebody had told me that I was affecting them in a way that I was scaring them or hurting them or affecting them with my eating disorder, I think I would come from a place of compassion. But being told to eat something is not the way to help someone with an eating disorder. Like, telling them what to do is, you're just not going to get a very good reaction. And so you really have to come at it with this compassion and understanding and a lot of communication.
Is that partly because of the control that you wanted to have over yourself, and then to have someone else breaking that control? Is that a piece of it?
The way that I look at this eating disorder is that it's kind of all consuming, and you're yourself. You don't lose who you are, but then you kind of gain this other personality, and it's what's the most important. Your eating disorder all of a sudden becomes more important than your friendships, any partners that you have, or family members. And it's this thing that you cherish, and it defines you. And at that time, when I was a teenager, my eating disorder, especially restricting, had become this thing that I was very proud of. Look what I did. I went from being this huge loser to, like, now I feel really great about myself in the mirror.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned on your website that it takes the place of your identity in certain ways. It's a way to define yourself.
Completely. And I think that's at the core of what my project is all about, is that when you have an eating disorder, it does become your identity, and you lose, like, that core essence that is you. It's still there, but, like, it's very hard to touch back into that, because all of a sudden you're so wrapped up in your eating disorder that you lose your own voice, you lose your own thoughts. Like, your thoughts and your voice are dictated by this eating disorder that's continuously telling you that you're not good enough, or, you know, to be ashamed or to hide or to be guilty. And so I think when my parents, or when anyone tells you, like, why don't you just eat some food, or, like, why are you doing this? It's you're trying to protect this, like, new identity that you have.
After the break, Kristen goes to college, gains some confidence, and begins to slowly carve out a voice separate from that of her eating disorder. The folks at Aura Kayak believe that connecting to nature is a deep human need. I talked with Brianna Madia, and she told me about one of her most memorable kayaking experiences.
We drove 68 miles down the Hole in the Rock Road. You get to the end, and you're basically on a cliff overlooking Lake Powell. A lot of people will just go there and kind of check it out and then drive away. We're like, well, the only kayaks that could possibly get down this thing would be these kayaks. So let's give it a shot. So we put them on our backs. They've got a little pocket in the back. So we put, like, some Nalgene of water and sunscreen and all our little stuff that we were going to need for the day. And we started hiking / falling down this gully. You can see the lake. I mean, it's beautiful. You can see the water. And it was the middle of August. It had to have been, like, 100 degrees. And so it took us about an hour, and we got down to the water. And both of us just fell into the water, and it was the perfect temperature. We set up the kayaks and just kind of took off, and we got out to where the lake sort of opened up a little bit. And a couple pulled up on a speedboat. This is a pretty remote corner of Lake Powell. There's no marinas around. You know, we saw, I think, two boats the whole day. And so this older couple pulls up, and they came right up to us and shut their motor off and just stared at us, and they go, "Where did you come from?" So we turned around and pointed to this canyon, this gully full of these huge boulders. And we were like, oh, we hiked from up there. The nice thing is that when you put the work in places like that, you get so much to yourself.
Escape the crowds and get on the water in a beautiful, foldable Oru kayak. Learn more at www.orukayak.com. That's www.orukayak.com.
For me, college was this time where I got to reinvent myself, which felt really good. everyone in high school, I felt very public and I felt like a lot of people knew my story, which at the time I was very ashamed of. So going to college, I knew no one. I chose a college that nobody from my high school was going to for a reason. And I had fun. I think that it was a very exploratory time in many different ways. And I got to start to express myself. I started studying art. I hadn't found words to express my anger or what I was feeling inside. And so art was this like very beautiful way that I could talk about my eating disorder. If I look back, all of the images that I made were all focused around the body, because at that time, I didn't want to accept that that was something that really had an impact on my life. I was so ready to let that go when I moved on to undergraduate. But I took a study abroad course in Florence, Italy, and I like took a beginning photography class and accidentally just fell into doing a lot of nude portraiture of my roommates, because I would slack off and like not take real portraits. So I would take portraits of the body. And then all of a sudden I fell into this world of taking nude portraiture, which was my first step into therapy. It was so cool. Like I would get together with my roommates or my girlfriends and we would talk about what it felt like to be in our bodies. And it was this really liberating experience. When I got back to California, all of these women started approaching me and they were like, "Kristen, I saw the photos that you took of so-and-so. Can you do that for me too?" And so all of a sudden I would have handfuls of women wanting me to take their photo. And for hours, we would just sit in these rooms and talk about body image. And we talk about feeling empowered in our bodies. Like, how can we do that? At the time, I had no idea that I wanted to be a therapist, but it was the first time that I had really played with that idea.
That's really lovely. And for you, being able to see the range of bodies, everyone looks so different naked, and we so rarely see people that way. I feel like that would be helpful too.
Exactly. For me, it was like this very healing experience, because all of a sudden I was surrounded by these women that I looked up to, because I was still very isolated and inward. At that time, I was a very quiet human. I would always look up to these women that had this confidence. I got to see all these different shapes and sizes and marks and stories. I did not have the confidence at the time to do anything like that, but just being surrounded by women who did was extremely healing.
So how did you find your way back to the outdoors?
So after college, I had this really weird stint where I was living in Silicon Valley and I had a temp job at Google. My life, according to me, was super. Then all of a sudden, I woke up one day and I was really unhappy. I was like tired of going out in San Francisco and I was just really bored. I had like a little inward breakdown. One day I just left my job. I left my relationship. I left San Francisco and I moved back to Santa Cruz and I was on Craigslist. I was going to sell hot dogs. I could have done anything. I was on Craigslist and I found this ad for an outdoor school and they needed someone like part-time naturalist, mostly to like wear costumes and sing songs around the campfire. And I was like, well, I know a lot about redwood trees. I could do this. And I just like need something totally different. And so I went and I interviewed. I had no experience, but I think that they were really desperate. And so they hired me. And all of a sudden I was wearing like newt costumes and squirrel costumes and just like running around this forest. I was kind of put in this situation where I was using my voice for the first time and teaching for the first time, and these things that are like really finding my way back to having a voice. Being in that position and then also being outside, I would find myself just in awe, and I felt so childlike, that kind of like what we were talking about earlier about I didn't want to let go of childhood. And all of a sudden I found it again. And it was really like this magical, special time in my life where all of a sudden I was developing who I was. It was the first time that I was proud of who I was.
Were any of those thoughts still there? The eating disorder thoughts?
Totally. Eating disorders are one of those things that it's hard to completely shake those voices and those thoughts. For me, it's been something that I've gone in and out. My behaviors and symptoms have kind of been really intense at times and then not been existent at times. And so when I went to start working at this outdoor school, I had a lot of these negative thoughts. And, you know, I thought that I would never be strong and confident in my body. And it was something that I like looked at as, ooh, I'm so embarrassed and like still trying to hide. I look back at a lot of my adolescence and like my young 20s of really trying to shield myself and hide behind other things. When I started working in the Redwoods or when we would go to Yosemite and I would have to stand in front of groups of adolescent teenage girls, okay, I can no longer hide. I need to be this role model. I need to stand up in front of everybody and do this. And yeah, the thoughts were still there. But as I started to be outside more and be a role model more, I think that that's when the change started to happen.
Yeah, they started to get a little quieter. It's just like any other type of addiction, right? You're in recovery, you're not recovered.
Oh, yeah. For me, I remember the most important thing was all of a sudden I was using my body to get to top of mountains. And I was leading this pack of people and they were relying on me. And so all of a sudden my body was no longer this thing that like needed to be desired. I was looking at my body like the function and getting to the top of a peak. And like, look how strong my legs are. Look how strong my arms are. I can get us to the top or halfway. It really doesn't matter how far we get, but I never thought that about my body. I was all of a sudden very thankful for it taking me to these places and allowing me to do these things.
When did you decide to go to school? You went to school for wilderness therapy?
Once I started doing guiding work, I did it for about 3 years. And I mostly worked in Yosemite. And then during the summer, I would come out to Colorado and I worked for a guiding company out here and would ski in the winter. And life was great. But I did a lot of living out of my car or tents. I thought like, okay, this work is really important. And this work is making me feel alive. And this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. How do I make this into a career? And looking back on outdoor education and guiding, yes, I could teach you about geology. I could teach you about different types of trees. But I loved doing more of like the team building aspect or like watching the change happen in the kids that I was leading. And you can like see what happens to their bodies and like see their minds expand when they're walking into the forest for the first time. Deepening their experience was something that I really cared about. And that's what I wanted to do. And so I thought that by going back to school for wilderness therapy, it was really just like the right move. I'm not a science nerd, but I am a feelings nerd. I would love to continue with eating disorder recovery through the outdoors. That's not really something that's been completely tapped into, which I totally get. You know, you have to do a lot of clearance. Are you healthy enough to be outside? A lot of the times you can't take somebody who's restricting or binging and purging out into the woods. Like it's actually not healthy. But I really would love to focus on long-term recovery in the outdoors and like building confidence and like having that self-efficacy that you build in the outdoors and bringing it back to their everyday lives.
In what ways do you think that women who are in recovery can find balance outside? More of an equilibrium, like a, this is okay, like I'm okay in myself versus I need this other thing to define me.
When we're outside, there's so many less distractions, you know, whether that be mirrors, cell phones, and societal pressures. And I almost love going out with groups of women for that reason, because there's like less of the, I'll call it the male gaze, and I don't have anything wrong with men. I love men. I think they're great. But like, there's something about being in a group of women where all of a sudden, like the pressure is completely taken off. And thinking that your body needs to look a certain way for someone else or for something else, is that pressure is gone. Nature doesn't judge you. You're just there and being, which is really special. I think being outside with like rock climbing, when you're like on a pitch and you're trying to get to like the next hold, you really have no time to think about how your body looks or like, ooh, this part of my body is jiggly. You're really just focusing on this next hold. You don't have enough time to like really allow that eating disorder voice to come in, which is cool. And so the more that we can do things like that, trust our bodies and use our bodies to get us to that next point or like the top of a peak or get down a mountain, there's less room for the eating disorder voice. And so over time and with practice, the eating disorder voice just gets smaller and smaller. And your voice and your thoughts and like your strength builds and builds.
Do you think that there's ever a risk of an individual overdoing it in the outdoors? You know, if you do a through hike, no matter what, you're probably going to lose some weight. Can that be a trigger for someone if they're not conscious of it, or they're not maybe as deep into recovery as they should be for taking on a challenge like that?
Well, yes. I think there's that risk in everything. And I think that, you know, some people can start a through hike, or some people could take up a sport thinking that the reason why they're going to do a through hike is to lose weight, but then also ultimately like finding a piece of themselves through this experience and realizing like, oh, wow, if I'm going to hike 15 miles today, I need this amount of carbohydrates. I need this amount of like healthy fat. I need this energy to allow me to get to these 15 miles. And so I think, you know, overall, it's a really great learning experience.
Kristen believes in this wholeheartedly, so much so that she created an online community called Wild and Weightless. Here is what its Instagram description says. A movement for those who have found freedom through eating disorders and negative body image through activities in the outdoors. I also asked Kristen to describe it for me.
So Wild and Weightless is a online community where women are able to talk about recovery in the outdoors. It's a place where women don't have to just be these strong powerhouses. We look on the internet and I look on Instagram all the time and there's these women kicking ass and it's so cool. And I love seeing these photos. For me, I had this time early in 2016 where I was personally having a hard couple months and like feeling really vulnerable and alone and isolating. And I felt some of these behaviors coming back. Mm-hmm. And I looked on the internet and I was like, wow, there's so much strength, but like, I also need a place where I feel like I can be vulnerable. And I find so much healing in being outside, but I need somewhere where I can talk about this. And that didn't really exist. There's a lot of people like being really strong, but I want to be really strong and also allow a place where we can be vulnerable and say that we have like weaknesses or fears. And so I'm hoping that Wild and Weightless is this place where we can celebrate women in the outdoors for all that they are, with their vulnerabilities, with their strengths, humor, everything. Right now, Wild and Weightless is a website where women can submit their stories and connect with other women that may also be struggling with the same thing they are, and maybe connect and go on a hike or connect and go climbing and feel like they can talk about this kind of stuff.
I think that's fantastic.
I'm pretty stoked.
Why do you think you're so driven to support other women in their journey and in their recovery?
Because it's fun. You know, being in school to be a therapist, there's a lot of times that are very serious. And yeah, I make space to be serious and to, you know, have those really deep moments. But I also feel that sometimes in recovery, one of the most healthy things that we can do is learn how to laugh again and like learn how to have fun and learn how to play. I found out how to like play again by going back outside. And so offering that space for women and laughing together and crying together is this thing that is healing for not only them, but also for me. Even talking about it now, I'm like, this sounds like so much fun. Like, let's go skiing. And I think it's something that comes like so naturally. For some people, it's really easy to talk about. For others, it's really tough. There's something about eating disorders, because they are so shameful and so isolating, that when we are able to talk about it outwardly, we're taking away the power from the eating disorder, you know? And so by talking about it and being open, we're shedding a light on it. And that's exactly what the eating disorder doesn't want. So we're like taking our power back by being able to talk about it and to celebrate our bodies. And so I think that's the key, is being open and having conversations is what's really going to heal us.
That's Kristen Ailes. You can learn more about her project at www.wildandweightless.com or through the podcast episode page via she-explores.com/podcast. I have to be honest, thinking about this episode, thinking about our conversation, thinking about my own personal relationships with myself and with others, I don't necessarily think that your best self is waiting for you on a mountaintop or at your goal weight or in your dream job. I can't say that that dream self, that best self, exists at all. But I do know that your true self, the one that's at the core of you, the core of that nesting doll that is your body, she's always with you. What Kristen said at the end about taking power from an eating disorder by talking about it, I think that's really powerful, and I agree with her statement in many ways. A word of warning, though, if you're seeking out help on the internet, there are countless communities that are not constructive and, in fact, are made up of people who encourage each other's disordered body images. If you run into one, make sure to flag the image and report it to the administrator of whatever site it is. Thank you to Kristen Ailes for speaking with me. Thank you to Oro Kayak for sponsoring the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you'll like the content at she-explores.com. And if you enjoy it a lot, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And it would really help if you shared the podcast with a friend who you think might enjoy it too. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at she_explores or by searching She Explores. Music is by Mind's Eye, PC1, Soft and Furious, Chris Zabriskie, and Little Glass Man. Until next week, bye.